very few kids wake up in the morning and say, I think I'll try to be rude and get everybody in my life to not like me today.
So how do I keep my classroom calm? We're going to talk about that next.
And now it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep.
First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like no others. Yep. With.
Oh, Scott, I am so excited for today.
Yeah, me too.
What was that? 3 months ago, maybe? I discovered Kirk and his podcast, and my life has never been the same in terms of parenting my stepkids, in terms of my classroom. And I'm so excited to talk to him today and introduce our audience to Kirk, because they need to listen to his podcast more than they need to listen to ours.
I don't disagree with you, but what they really need to do, Tim, is they need to go. If they haven't done this yet, we need you to go and register for Global School Play Day. That's the first Wednesday of every February. This last year, in just its fifth year, Tim, over 500,000 kids from 72 nations joined the Unstructured Play Movement because their teachers said it's important. That's what we got to do. We're advocates for our students. Let's advocate for play.
Let's lead the way and get the word out. You guys know people at your school. You know people on Facebook and all the different social media. Put the word out there and help us let people know about Global School Play Day so that more kids will be playing. And I can't tell you how cool it is at the end of the day to have some of these kids say, that was the greatest day of my life. What, getting to play all day at school was the greatest day of your life? And they're like, well, when can we do this again? And I tell them, every single day when you go home from school.
And you know what, Tim? The teachers that I know that do this, they all say, I never learned more about my students than I did that day. And it created incredible relationships between them and a different level of respect. So, hey, let's keep the play rolling and let's keep the show rolling, Tim.
That's right. So Kirk Martin is here with us. He is the founder and the mover and shaker behind Celebrate Calm. celebratecalm.com. He has a podcast that they just changed the name of to Calm. Is it Calm Parenting? Is that right, Kirk?
Calm Parenting, yes.
Yeah, you just changed it this week. And folks, go listen to this podcast. Get his materials. It is going to change your classroom and your parenting. And we're just going to get him talking so you can see what I'm talking about. Kirk, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. And thanks for what you do. So I appreciate it. You guys do the hard work, your teachers. I always tell parents, you can't even get one kid to listen to you. Imagine having like 20 kids and half of them are addicted to Fortnite. Right? Like, you know what I mean? It's a brutal job. So,
well, yeah, we have 33.
33. The fact that you're not an alcoholic is a miracle.
Well, how do you know? No. So Kirk, get us started. You have a, all kinds of practical ideas that are great interventions for kids in the classroom. And you got a few ideas to share with our listeners this evening. So get us started with some of those.
You know, I just kind of reorient us to two different ways to handle misbehavior, because a typical way as parents and teachers is you react to a child misbehaving and then you give a consequence. And the hard part for most of the kids we work with is they don't care about consequences. Right? You can take away things all day long and they don't care. And so you're kind of punishing for failure. So what if we flip that around and say, I know I have a student who struggles with focus, or he moves a lot, he blurts out, he has trouble with short-term memory. And what if proactively I were to give that child tools to succeed so that I'm actually creating successes for that child, so we don't have to get to that, right? It's that never-ending behavior chart thing, right? The red, yellow, and green thing, where most of the kids that I work with, they basically just live on red. And even if they have their best day, they're pretty much just a faint yellow. You know what I mean? No matter what, they're never getting to green. And so they just kind of give up. So if you don't mind, I'll share a couple ideas real quickly.
Yeah, no, Kurt, and I totally buy into what you say. If one of the reasons I have a tough time with golf is because I fail at it so much. And so right. You have these kids that are failing at behaviors and these things, and they don't know how to do it right. So go for it.
Yeah. And one thing I loved about the, what you mentioned about the, about playing and observing kids is you can learn so much about kids just literally by observing them. And you can use everything that you see, you can use that in your class. Like I know, you know, if you see a kid who's always hiding under things, or even at recess, he likes confined spaces. Then I let those kids take tests sitting underneath their desk, because they're already showing kind of a natural proclivity to like being in confined spaces. How do I use that to my advantage? So I'll give you a quick one. Actually, it's not that quick, but it's a cool example. Like, say you walk in your classroom and there's a kid who's sitting there and he never stops bouncing his legs. Well, it tells you pretty quickly, kid needs to move, right? I don't need a diagnosis. I just know if I don't give this kid some movement within my boundaries, after about 17 minutes, this is what's going to happen. He's going to get up, start walking around, talking to other students, interrupting class. And then you as a teacher have to go to, hey, Jacob, hey, look at me. 1, 2, 3, eyes on me. Look. Right. And then we go, we take away recess, which hurts us as teachers. Right. So imagine though that I pull that child aside at recess and say, listen, Jacob, I really need your help, because the strong-willed kids love feeling helpful. They love feeling like adults. So Jacob, I need your help. Listen, when I'm teaching in class, my mouth gets really dry. I need to drink some water. And also, I know you need to move. Look, I like observing kids. I don't need to put a label and say, it's clear that you have ADHD. I don't need to say that. I just need to know, kid looks like he needs to move a little bit. So you and I are going to have a secret signal. When I touch my ear like this or my nose like this, here's what I want you to do. You get up out of your seat, you come up to my desk, you're going to grab my water bottle. You're going to take it to the back of the room and you're going to refill it. Then you're going to bring it up, sit it on my desk, and then you're going to sit down. In fact, you're going to be Mr. Invisible, right? You're not going to talk to anybody. You're not going to distract anybody. And a couple of things here. I like giving kids specific jobs to do. It's very grounding for them. And saying general things like, you need to be on your best behavior. For most of the kids I work with, what they're saying inside is, that is my best behavior, which is not very good, right?
So true.
And I like talking to the tough kids in a really even, matter-of-fact tone. I found when I talk to the toughest kids, like they're adults, rather than doing, I don't like the really sweet, hey buddy, it really helped me out, because that sounds condescending, but I don't like the snotty tone, right? Like every time I give you a job to do, you just end up talking to other kids. Because if you don't mind being honest, if you use a snotty tone with me, I'm gonna tell you to go F off, right? Like, I mean, it's just not a helpful tone. So here's what happens. I'm teaching in class and I notice this kid who almost every day for the first 87 days of school has gotten up and disrupted class. But now I notice it, so I give him the signal. He gets up, grabs my water bottle, takes it back, refills it, sits it on my desk and sits down. I get to end that little scene with, hey, good job, thank you. Because I like affirming for the positive. The kids that we're talking about, literally from the time they came out of the womb, from the time they get up in the morning at home, they're probably doing something wrong. Their parents are getting on them. They're not as good as the other good kids in your class. So they know they're different. And so a little bit of that positive affirmation is awesome. So a couple things. It took about 23 seconds to refill the water bottle, right? So, but it was all within my boundaries because I gave them a specific job. I didn't say, hey, little kid with an ADD brain, if you get bored in my class, just run around. I'm not giving him control. I'm giving him a little bit of movement. I gave him a very specific job. My little OCD kids, I used to put like a red magic marker line on the bottle and say, go to the back of the room and refill this exactly to the red line. And the little OCD kids would be in the back like pouring it out, refilling it, trying to get it to that red line. And it's very grounding for them. But the important part of the story for me is I just created a success. So when that kid's back at the water fountain refilling my water bottle, he knows he did something well. for those kids, all I can tell you is it's very, very grounding. And the next week I can say, hey, Jacob, this week, I believe you're capable, because I love those words. I believe you're capable of sitting for 23 minutes before you need to move, right? And I gradually work that child up so he sits for 17 minutes, then 23 minutes, then 28 minutes, because I'm creating successes but giving him tools in order to succeed. Does that make sense?
Totally. Now, do you advocate for the student to have a signal to give to the teacher when they feel like they need to move and do something like that? Or is it the teacher has to be observant enough to notice that the kid needs to move and gives the kid the signal?
It can be either way, right? Like if this kid's got enough self-awareness, I just want him to know, like, hey, this doesn't happen like every 3 minutes, dude.
Right?
This is like once a class period, twice a class period, we'll do some kind of job.
And you have another job that you do with the kids too, where you have them take the backpack to another teacher and then bring it back. You know, you shift in the backpack back and forth, right?
Yeah, I keep a backpack because I like working sensory, some of the sensory stuff. You keep some books in a backpack, and then I can have the little job. Hey, take to Miss Anderson next door, take the blue backpack, and then he goes next door classroom, picks up the red backpack and brings it back again. Under a minute, two adults got to say, hey, good job and thank you. If you don't mind, I've been doing this new example that I love. Because we get into teaching about how kids use their brains. Mind if I do this one?
Yeah, Scott, did you have a follow-up?
I just think you're right on when you say vagueness. Vagueness is the enemy of responsibility, right? So the more specific we can be, I'm going to credit Gene Bedley with that. Our dad actually taught me that. So, but I do think, you know, it is the enemy to responsibility. When you give kids vagueness, they're going to create whatever that goal is in their mind. When you give them the specific goal, like bringing the water bottle back or the backpack, then that's really clear to a child.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah.
I love that quote. I'm going to steal that and give credit to your dad. So here's a good example. And this can be blurting out. It can be, let me do a quick blurting out and then a remembering to turn in their homework. So you get a kid who's blurting out in class. Obviously it's kind of rude, right? But if you go to him and say, hey, stop blurting out, it's rude. You've kind of assigned a motive to his behavior. And most kids aren't just trying. Like, look, very few kids wake up in the morning and say, I think I'll try to be rude and get everybody in my life to not like me today, right? Like, I love being on red, missing class field trips, and getting made fun of in the bathroom, right? Like, nobody wants that. So what if I came to that kid and I said, I just like using the name Jacob. Jacob, listen, you know why I love teaching you? You've got this really cool brain. It's really, really busy. Got all these thoughts going through your brain. You're like a junior Thomas Edison, man, with all these ideas. But what I do notice about you is you do struggle with short-term memory. And that's going to make school harder for you at times, because a lot of what we do in school is based on memorizing things and using short-term memory. And you struggle in that area. But the great thing about that is that I want you to know is the opposite corollary is you have a very strategic brain, right? That's what makes you very good at building with Legos and chess and checkers and arguing with everybody in your life. Right? You can leave some of the sarcasm out, but I do want kids to know when they have a weakness, there's always a corresponding strength. And so, yeah, you're going to struggle in school a little bit, because here's what happens in my class. You get one of those ideas, but you are afraid you're going to forget it. And so you blurt out my class, and that's unacceptable. See, I don't like making excuses for kids when they mess up. But rather than saying you're being rude, assigning a motive, I just say, that's not going to happen in my class. So then we bring in the tool. And we talk a lot about giving kids tools. So imagine this little, a ticket of some kind, like a little cardboard ticket. Look, this stuff doesn't have to be fancy. And I've got three of them. And I say, Jacob, here's the deal. Every day when you walk into my class, I'm going to give you three talk tickets. Here's how it works. Whenever you get one of your amazing ideas, instead of blurting out, I want you to just flash one of those tickets. I'll either say, zip it, because I believe you can hold it till after class. And by the way, sometimes with a tool, what we've had teachers do is have the parents make up a little notepad. And it's got a little light bulb on at the top for like a little idea guy. Because I want to affirm the good parts of their nature, right? They are idea people.
And so write down the idea. You can come stuff it in the little idea box on my desk. And then after lunch every day, I'll pull two notes out of there and you can share your ideas with the class, right? Or when you hold up your ticket, I'm going to say, go ahead, share your amazing off-topic idea. Because it's always going to be off-topic. I'm a realist. It's just going to happen. So that afternoon when he's like, Mr. Martin, I want the new Star Wars games Friday night. And then he catches himself and he holds up his little ticket. Now with some intensity, and I very much like positive intensity, I can go to him and say, you know what was cool? Back in math class, you wanted to blurt out. You started to blurt out, but you held up your ticket. You know what that's called? That's called self-control, my friend. That's the way we do it in this classroom. That kind of positive intensity really starts to impact the child's brain, because what they're seeking is not attention. They're seeking intensity. And unfortunately, the bad kids tend to only get intensity when they mess up and people get on them. So I like to bring, as a teacher, as a parent, positive intensity, but I'm giving him a tool in order to control himself rather than just saying, hey, I know your very nature is to talk all the time, but guess what? For the whole day, you don't get to do it, right? Like, that's not normal. So I like to give him a tool in appropriate times to do that. I'll give you one more that's related. So I get kids who, have you, either of you guys ever had kids who, like, in the middle of class will just start reading a book and it's like reading?
Okay. I got one this year.
Yeah. And it's, look, you're in a tough spot, right? Like, stop reading.
You're a bad kid. You're reading.
So there's one of two ways to handle, which I know it's frustrating with these kids as a teacher and a parent. And you're going to be frustrated and say, look, put your book away. You know, it's not reading class. Put your book away. Why can't you follow directions? And we tend to pile on. But what if with that same kid, the same teacher, I looked at him and said, hey, you know why I love you? Because you're curious and you love to read. And that's going to make you wildly successful in life. But right now it's math class, so we're not reading, and you're going to put your book away. But after lunch, I will give you 90 seconds. And because I want the rest of the class to hear what you're reading about, because I wish they were as curious as you are. Like, that doesn't have to take a lot of time. I'm saying no to him, but I'm not going the negative route, because the kids that we work with, as soon as they get negativity, shut down immediately. And then they feel like failures. And then they begin like, I'm just not going to work for you. So I told him to put it away, but I affirmed what's behind it, which is, you're really curious, and I want the other kids to learn from you. Instead of this kid always being that one kid in class who's on red, who misses his school field trip, who goes to the principal's office. It's a really cool kind of way to flip that around.
I love it. You're just affirming kids. You're loving kids, man. You know, I mean, it's we think of it that we're loving kids sometimes, but I really believe that what you're talking about and your methods are so much more positive, and they're empowering for kids and affirming of who they are as a person, you know? And I just love that. Now, what about the homework thought? Tell us, give us an idea for kids that don't turn in their homework.
Don't give homework.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, make them play. I'm not going to get into that. You guys can deal with that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine is more, it's the same with the blurting out. If I go to the kid and say, look, you're going to struggle with this, because you do have trouble with short-term memory. And I hope this doesn't offend you. And I do a lot of training of teachers, and it usually doesn't. But, the only place you really have to have good short-term memory is in school. Like, I was in the corporate world for 20 years. I never had to memorize information. I had to access it, analyze it, present it, information, ideas for a boss. But what I want kids to know is, you're not dumb and you're not stupid. Just because it takes you longer to take a test, right? You're the last one to turn it in. You're a slower processor, but that means you're a deeper processor, right? And so you're going to struggle. So I did this with a kid once, and I said, listen, I'm not making excuses for you. You're going to struggle with remembering to turn in your homework. But I believe that you're capable of using that other part of your brain to come up with a really creative idea. So what he did, he went home, he earned some money, or he stole it from his parents. Either way, he's being resourceful. And he bought a scanner, right? $15. So every day when he goes home, he does his homework. He scans it into his parents' computer, and then he emails it to his teacher. Boom! He just turned in his homework at 4:37 p.m. And at first, all the parents and teachers are like, well, that's not the right way to do it. You know, one day he's going to have a job. And I'm like, yeah, one day he's going to be 27, right? But he's going to be a grown adult who, if he doesn't get a paycheck, is going to starve to death and die. Like right now, he's an 8 or 12-year-old kid who has 400 other things he'd rather do than turn in homework. But what happened was eventually, you know, when we kind of get on board, everybody came on board and watch. Can you imagine affirming this kid and saying, you know, it was really cool. That was brilliant. You have enough self-awareness to know that you have a weakness in this one area, but you didn't use it as an excuse. You came up with a really creative idea. And now you're the first one every day to turn in your homework. So now the teacher the next day greets him and says, hey, Jacob, nice job. First one in my class to turn into homework. And all the other kids are like, well, how did he do that? And then the teacher can say, he emailed it to me yesterday at 4:37 p.m. Losers. Right? I'm kidding. You don't say that. But it's, I'm a little bit defensive of the bad kids because they get a really bad rap in school. And so don't say the losers thing. But I like coming up with creative ways for kids to learn how to be responsible, right? So it's affirming them. It's not letting them off the hook, but I'm allowing them to use some creativity just to stretch me a little bit and say, it's good enough for me, my friend. I like the idea.
That is right on. Yeah, Scott and I don't, neither one of, we teach fifth grade, fourth grade. We do not assign homework to our kids, but that doesn't mean there's not stuff that they have to take home and finish and get it back to us the next day. So those are some great ideas. I love it.
Well, good. That's awesome. I wish my son had had you as teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we would have had him. Although I've heard your stories.
No, you don't. So,
I like those kids. So tell us, we're doing things a little backwards today. Now that we've heard your ideas, tell us a little bit about yourself. What have you been up to for the last several years? You've reached over 600,000, am I right, parents and educators?
Yeah, we've been really lucky to have. Anyway, we do a lot of training around the country. So the cool thing we can do is we can go into one school or school district. In the afternoon, I can train the teachers, professional development, but it's actually fun. And teachers actually like it because you know what I mean? Because I've seen a lot of professional development. It's like, oh, that's nice theory. I don't think you've actually been in a classroom. And then during the day, my son often does school assemblies. So he's teaching kids, how do you control yourself? How do you control your impulses? And then in the evening, we'll do parent workshop. And so that way, it's kind of cool. We can get teachers, parents, and kids all on the same language, all on the same page, using the same language. And it's kind of cool. We've got the podcast. We've got a free newsletter. So, you know, teachers, I love helping teachers because I know that I could not do it. I know I couldn't spend all day, every day. I love kids, but I'm not sure I could do it in a classroom. So I have enormous respect for what you guys and everybody listening does. So we're glad to help however we can. So
absolutely. Well, our listeners can stay tuned. In a few minutes, we'll find out how to learn more and from you. But right now, we're going to switch gears for a few minutes and play a game with you. One of your symbols that you use is Bob the Nuclear Reactor. And so you're trying to stop parents from becoming nuclear reactors with their kids, right? So yes. We're going to call our little game that we're going to play with you today, Kirk and Nuclear Reactors. Scott, tell our audience who Kirk will be competing for today.
Kirk, you're going to be competing for Casey Dolson, a director of curriculum in Liverpool, New York. If you're able to answer two out of these three questions correctly, then Casey, yes, Casey will be awarded. Kirk, tell her. This is awesome.
That's awesome. My son's name is Casey, so I'm nervous.
Okay, what are they going to win?
Oh, sorry. We have two programs to be directly relevant. One is called ADHD University, which will really help you with your students. understanding how their brains work. And another program is called Brain Boosters. It's basically our professional development program, but it's on, we can send it as downloads or audio CDs. So lots of ideas like you just heard. Be glad to give that to you.
Wow. So awesome. I'm jealous of Casey. Okay. Yeah. So Kirk, here we go with your first question about nuclear reactors.
Okay.
Because we know you're an expert on that. In the first 50-year history of commercial nuclear power in the United States, how many people in the public have been injured or killed by nuclear reactors? Is it A?
About 200.
Is it B?
About 30.
Or is it C?
No one.
I'm going to say 30.
30. Well, believe it or not, zero people in the public have been injured or killed by nuclear reactors in the 50th history.
In Chernobyl, Case and I visited Chernobyl.
Yeah.
A lot of people did. Darn it, yeah. I should have gone with zero. Okay.
Yeah, I guess the power plant that was in Chernobyl, that could not happen in the United States because we do not have
different.
The same. Yeah. Anyway, nuclear energy is safe or safer than any other form of energy available. In fact, recent studies have shown that it is safer to work in a nuclear power plant than in an office. Isn't that hilarious? Okay.
Studies by the nuclear industry.
A big nuke.
So question number two, how much nuclear fuel in total has been generated in the United States in the past 50 years? Is it A?
Enough to fill a football field to the depth of 10 yards.
Or is it B?
Enough to fill the entire state of Maryland to a depth of 75 inches.
Or is it C?
I didn't know there was going to be math in tonight's quiz.
Or is it C?
Enough to fill an average family swimming pool.
All right. So it's either the football field, the state of Maryland, or a swimming pool.
I'm going to go with the state of Maryland.
Are you sure?
You know, I probably should go with the, since I've you got phone a football, friend. Football field.
Yeah, you do enjoy football, don't you?
I love football.
Yeah, yes, well, that's a much better guess. That is correct. A football field to 10
well
yards.
Well done.
From death.
Sorry, I'm from Maryland. I thought you were throwing me a bone. I need.
Yeah, and believe it or not, 96% of this waste can be recycled.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, okay, question number three. And
72% of the statistics used in podcasts are inaccurate.
The amount of radiation the average American gets from nuclear power can be compared to A?
About the same amount as we get from coal.
Or B?
About the same amount as we would take in a cross-country flight.
Or C?
About the same as eating a banana.
B, it's a flight.
Wait. You got to like hesitate before you give those answers.
That's what they told us at Chernobyl. When they got us to go there, saying it wouldn't hurt us.
Oh, well, okay. Are you absolutely sure about that? Because that's in Russia.
No, I need to rethink that. So
this is America.
This is America where we have created in 50 years only a football field worth of waste.
And no one's been injured.
And zero people have been injured. So the average American gets, not Russian, but American gets, how much would that be compared to coal or taking a cross-country flight or eating a banana?
Eating a banana.
Oh, I think I think that's a better guess.
I'd go with a banana.
Yeah, you should go with a banana. Okay, that is correct, Kirk. Scott, how did Kirk do on our ridiculously impossible quiz today?
Kirk, good job. You got 2 out of 3 correct-ish.
With 8 guesses.
Ish. And that's good enough to be a winner. Congratulations. You obviously won absolutely nothing, but Casey, she just won all that amazing material to help the students in her school district in Liverpool, New York.
Awesome.
That's cool. So, Kirk, tell our listeners how how they can follow up and learn more from you and get your materials and listen to your podcast. Give some details, will you?
So it's easy. CelebrateCalm.com. You can get free newsletter, the podcast is there. Everything is there. We've got materials, but do, Tim and Scott, if you're a teacher, our stuff's expensive. So if you're a teacher, email us and say, I'm a teacher, give me a break. If you're ever interested, don't buy it off the website at full price. Seriously, we'll help you with it. We'll help you out with it. But my email address is Kirk, K-I-R-K, at CelebrateCalm.com. If you're struggling with a student, feel free. You can email me. I'll be glad to email back and forth and help you with some ideas. However we can help, we will. So just let
us amazing. Know. Well, thank you so much for your very practical ideas. And trust me, folks, there are many, many more ideas like this and even better on Kirk's podcast in his materials that you can buy through their website. So go check out Calm Parenting podcast anywhere podcasts can be listened to. Isn't that right, Kirk?
That is it.
All right. Excellent. And thank you so much for listening, everybody, to our podcast. We appreciate your support. We appreciate your reviews if you like to write those for us. And Scott?
Yeah, Tim. Is it that time?
It's that time to thank.
Global School Play Day. just kidding. I know where you're going with this. No, I got to say, Kirk, thank you so much again for coming on tonight. We totally, or today, whenever the people are listening to this, we totally appreciate it. And just the fact that, you know, you care about teachers and educators and what we're trying to do, and you understand the complexity of the profession, the job, and in a way that shows empathy. And I think that's what a lot of teachers really appreciate is when people can just have a little ounce of empathy rather than be so critical. You have a lot of people that are passionate about changing kids' lives for the better. So thank you so much.
Hey, we appreciate what you guys do. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. But most of all, we want to thank
Mom and Dad.
Thanks for listening, Mom and Dad.
Getting her done. Think I might change my name to Ron Bedley so I could be one of those Bedley brothers. Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing